Okay, you're listening to Type Radio. My name is Jan Ohan, and now we are talking.
Guten Abend. Jetzt gibt es Type Radio.
You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
It's June 21st, 2019. We're at the studio of our next guest, Jan Ohan.
Yeah.
You know the first question?
Yes, I
do. Are you religious?
No. To be honest, I'm an atheist. So that whole concept of God and afterlife, to me that sounds quite ridiculous. But that doesn't mean that I don't appreciate some parts of it, like their buildings or the art or the whole storytelling part of it. Because what we do is also, of course, a sort of storytelling. So, well, that's it.
And did you come to this decision very early on?
Yeah. My parents are not so, also not religious or something. It has never been in my surroundings, so it was not a big problem. And I like people like John Lennon, for example. So I have these heroes that are all atheists and they all made songs about forget about God and stupid. And so it was never a question in my head.
And do you have rituals?
That's a difficult question. I don't think so. And besides making a cup of coffee or listening to talk radio in the morning, so just keep it quiet and to start the day. But in my work, I don't think so. It's difficult. Because rituals is a very big thing. You know, it can mean so many things. And I don't think that you a question or asking me which sock I put on first. So
if you'd like to tell us.
So I don't know. Maybe in my work, it's more a certain attitude that is my ritual.
And when you say a certain, what is that attitude?
I want to make different things with different techniques and different materials, and also let these characteristics of these materials and techniques influence the designs as well. So they are not so much about my ego or about what is hip right now or what other people are doing. Well, but they are all these works and the way I approach them, I always give everything to that project. And then it doesn't matter if it's my own initiative or a real client, an assignment by a client. They all get the same intention. And that's, you could say that it's my ritual. Mm-hmm.
And how do you start?
Does it make sense? Or?
Yeah, completely. Yeah.
And when you have there's a lot of projects that are self-initiated. How do you start that? What is there an urge that you have?
There's a
dream. I don't know.
Yeah. I think if you go to my website and there are maybe 40 projects on there. Of course, you made more in your life. Yeah, I'm now 38 years old, so I've made more than there's on this website right now. That's all right. I think half of it is my own work. And I hope that the difference between the two of them is not that big, maybe in scale, because one is just a wedding gift, it's a stone, and the other one is a big lettering on the bridge. Then you can see that must have been an assignment, and that's maybe some of his personal work. I understand this. But I have the same approach to all of them. What was your question?
No, but how do you, the self-initiated projects, how do they start?
Yeah, out of questioning and out of... sometimes it's something really small, like stone carving. I don't know, 10 years ago or something, I started to do that. And then I think that you need to, first you need to learn something, and then you have this level where you're on, and you can execute something on a professional level. And then you need to stop doing what you was learned to do and do new things with it. So then I try to come up with new ways of stone carving. Normal stones, normal letters you cut in a V gutter. So in this case, I decided I wanted to make it more three-dimensional and to come forward instead of in the stone, etc. So it's just always.
But is it in case you are thinking of like a material or a technique used for a certain material? Is that your interest, or does it, or do you have an idea for a design or a logo, whatever, lettering, and then you think it should be done in that material? That's why I need to know how that material works.
As you can see, my walls are all white. I get these comments sometimes at lectures. Why is there a huge lack of color in your work? But I like the colors of the stone already have, or brass that is bronze, so it looks like it's been outside for 20 or 30 years and it's darker, or brass that is just sanded and then it has a different feeling. It's the same material. You can also use chemicals, oxidize it. So I made this little sculpture for my mother's 60th birthday that is mint green, all the same materials. But I like the fact that these techniques also bring their own colors with them. So sometimes it really starts with the techniques and colors and the results of them. The fact that a brush stroke, influence your type differently from a chisel that you put in the stone.
And is it always that you come back to the letter?
Yeah, I think so. In the end, all these projects have something to do with type.
And did you always have that?
I was also working at before. I'm now working on my own for the last 13 years. But before that, I worked at several studios, at Tel Design and Studio Dunk and with René. I was a student of Gerard Unger, a private student, so we had meetings in Amsterdam. But I also made lots of logos and books, and there's lots of work that you will never see anymore because it's from 20 years ago or something. Yeah, I'm an autodidact, sort of semi-autodidact, mm-hmm. Right? Because I tried three studies.
Yeah, and yes, I read that in your biography.
To be real honest, in the first years I quit them, but to make it a little bit less stupid, I say, okay, in the second year I quit all three of them. So I had a lot of years that I already worked for studios when
and
I was 18 years old already.
Why quit so many times? Or at least why keep going back to try again? And
because
try
I had this image of the art school. I have an older brother, he's about 10 years older than I am. And he's a bit opposite of what I am. I'm really neat and everything is clean here. And he was with his long hair and had a different color every week and tattoos and a band. And so I had this idea that was art school. And so when I came there, it was very different, of course. And somehow, if I look back at that, it's quite stupid as well. Because I didn't want to be that person also. I just needed to find myself. But I didn't find myself at art school. And the problem is that I already started to work at Studio Dunk. He's passed away, unfortunately, a couple of years ago, Gert-Jan Dunk. So he was my first mentor. And he gave me so many opportunities and introduced me to the right persons here in Amsterdam. And
is that also the reason that you became aware that that personal one-on-one approach, having this mentor which you speak
really
to
important.
Regularly, instead of like a school system where you have different teachers, that one-on-one approach works better for you?
Yeah, exactly. So when I went to art school, for example, I Googled all my teachers and then I saw from some of them I didn't found anything. So then in my head, back then, I now realize it's different, but I thought, yeah, what are they going to learn me? And so I had this really strange approach back then. So I was also looking around at my classmates and I think, yeah, do they really understand what designing means? And I still have a different opinion about it, I think. Although my opinion is very, I think it's very obvious that what I talked about earlier, that it's not about my ego and it's about this project that I'm working on and I give the best because it's on a bridge or on a building and that already has its own identity. Why should I put my sauce on top of it? Because I want everybody to see it's Jan O'Haan work. Be an artist then and work like that, but being a designer is something else.
Yeah, so that you're there to serve the...
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's our profession. And already at art school, I had this strong opinion. So I collapsed with everybody, my fellow students and also the teachers. Nobody knew what to do with me. But now I meet them at the lectures and things. I get emails from former teachers. So now they suddenly say, yeah, I've always seen
of course.
Would be
the genius.
Yeah, I'm not a genius, not at all. No, I'm just a simple designer.
But do you also mentor other people?
No, not yet. As you can see, I live in a small apartment just outside of the center of Amsterdam. And I've just made this life for me with a cheap rent, so I can focus on my work for the last 10 years. And I'm maybe within the next upcoming years, I will move out and start a studio and maybe with an intern or something. And then I can help other people. So now I can only do that on a lecture and try to be honest and try to mirror them that it's all, you can also work like me.
So would you consider teaching then?
Yeah, not so much teaching. Of course, I do sometimes lectures and workshops. So they are also a sort of But I'm 38 years old. I'm very busy. I've got a lot of work to do. So I can teach when I was 50.
So you should be teaching.
Yeah, but not right now. I can. I will do that. Of course, I will take my part of that also, mm-hmm. Because I've got a lot from a lot of people. So I will give that away. Yes, I will do, but not right now.
I feel you rationalize a lot of your thoughts.
Yeah. I do.
Like you really think why? You ask a lot of thinking. Why is a big.
That's the most important question. Why? Why to make something? What's the opportunity? What's the gap to be filled? Or what's the question of the client? Or what's the dream that you had last night? Or what's the opportunity that this particular material gives you? Or this particular technique gives you? That's a very important question. Why? That's the most important question.
But what about impulsiveness? When you talk about play, how does that...
Play. I read this quote by Escher. Yeah, what was it again?
I wrote it down.
Oh, yeah. My work is a game, a very serious game. That's what I mean with play and game. So I feel really related to it. I want to play. I want to make all these things. I make type with butterflies. I make type in stone. I make huge type on bridges. I do all different kind of things, I think. But at the same time, I'm very precise at it. So that's
an accident. Does that ever play a role?
Happy little accidents, but not so much like I throw a Christmas ball filled with ink to a wall or something and then see what happens.
So I guess the material and the reaction of the material is probably the unexpected. Or is that also controlled?
I'm not so much interested in the unexpected also. Okay. I'm a designer. I think about what I make and what I want to accomplish and how can I use these techniques in my benefit or make something weird with it. Or, you know, we're designers. I'm not an artist. You don't need to give me a blank canvas and then ink and do something. I make a drawing of an idea or something, you know, like a technical drawing. Oh, next week I'm going to make this. I would not make a picture, a painting. This is also at art school, you know, you need to draw portraits of yourself. I was not interested in that.
And what is your first typographic memory?
Yeah, there was very early age on. There was always type in my life, actually. So this older brother of mine, he's almost 10 years older, so he was really into graffiti also. And as a child, yeah, that's how children learn, by copying their older brothers and sisters. So I did that, maybe I was 5 or 6 years old from that moment on. And in our garden, what is schuur ook weer in Engels?
Shed.
In the shed.
In the shed. It was full with spray cans, so my parents were... They didn't bother that, so I could easily take one or two out of them and start doing that myself. So I did that also at a very early age. And also in that German part of my family, there are typographers and printers. And so for me, it was always very obvious that I wanted to do that. And when my older brother went to art school in St. Joe's, that was the period when the Meta and the Scala and the Sans, so it was this little bit of a new upcoming type. It was a bit more modern than the Universe, etc. So I saw these assignments passing by, and sometimes he showed it to me, that the L of the Meta had this little notch, or the little sherif at the bottom, so it's different from the capital I, etc. So and then I was 12 years old, and my father, he was not a designer, but he bought a Macintosh Performer because he read in the newspaper about the personal computer made his entrance. So he went to a shop and bought a personal computer, but he just had a good taste. He didn't know anything about it, and he chose that Macintosh Performer because it looks nice and not the IBMs back then. So when I was 11 years old, there was this computer suddenly in my place, and I was not interested in making portraits and little happy little accidents. I was interested in designing already. So for me, it was voila. And ever since, I've been behind these computers as well, and also besides the whole hand work. So this Macintosh is made also.
But you never lived through the era of pre-computer. That was not like a conscious area for you, because I mean your work is so rooted in history and all these traditional craftsmanship, you could say.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Is that because you didn't live through
that
when you
were
young?
I hope it's also contemporary at the same time. I hope so, because I already learned in this life that the way you look at yourself is very different most of the time than other people look at you. So also with your work, and that's all right with me. But I hope that if people look at my work, they also see that it's contemporary. So they have this, you see this lettering on a very old farmhouse from 1793, I think. I've made lettering called Vishorn. It's a monument. I hope that you see, yes, I understand that there's this type, and it's not a Helvetica or a very futuristic type or very ancient Roman lettering. I understand why this type is chosen. And yes, there it seems like there it had a past. It came from somewhere, but it's also from now, from today. But, you know, that's how I look at my work. So my question to you, do you agree with that, or do you have that?
Yes, yes. I was just curious if that, like, how, why? You know, I can imagine that you have interest in history and historical.
I have an interest in Dutch history, yeah, in the history of where I came from, with my parents, in German history. Yeah, I have a huge interest in that. So that probably shows through my work. And of course, the way you make some projects and that attract other projects, other assignments that are similar in that area. So you have to be careful and do different things also. And I'm always aware of that. I need to make these different things. I need to make small wedding gifts and a big lettering on a bridge and a butterfly cabinet, mimicry cabinets, and then something in wood, then something in stone, then something in ink, then a series of rugs, etc. So I really, I'm always really try to make this portfolio filled with all these different kind of things, because I know they will attract new assignments in the.
I think it's also interesting the longevity of the projects, because they are part of the architecture or the fabric of mm-hmm. the city. I mean, if it's a bridge, you know that it's not, they're not temporary projects.
No, that's true. But and they are also not about me. They are not about the client. They are about that bridge, that particular bridge.
It will outlive you, both you and the client.
And in the end, I have enough attention and enough nice assignments. So it's, there's no need for your style to show the world, to make sure, oh, everybody sees that's Jan O'Haan work. It's ridiculous. If you just be honest, if you just make honest design, like Dieter Rams, I think was a very honest designer. In the end, your style will also be shown.
But in the end, he is recognized for his work.
But the way these things look that he made, were not because he only thought, oh, they are nice or they were hip.
They followed their function.
Yes. So he's a designer. He was one of the best designers. Oh, he still lives, huh?
Yes, he does.
What keeps intriguing me is that the fact that you started and quit three educations within a year. I was wondering if that self-consciousness and know where you're going, that must have made you also sort of realize you are embedded in history. And
of course. But I had these mentors. I had Gert-Jan Deunk. Mm-hmm. He was already 55 years old when I was 18 and I started to work with him. I had Geert Unger. He was very old. I had René Knip, also Hartmut Kowalk, who was a friend of René. Jaco Emme van Tel Design. I had many mentors in life that I met, and they were older.
And did you approach Gerard Unger?
Gert-Jan Deunk, he was a friend of Gerard Unger, and he once gave me a little post-it with a mobile phone number on it. He said, you have to call Gerard. I spoke to him and I told him that you want to work with him or something like that. So I was a bit nervous and I phoned.
But what was the reason? Why did you want to work with
I was already type designing back then.
Yeah, okay.
So I was working at Studio Deunk when I was 18 years old, making books. I have a lot of books here that I made. And so in my spare time, and also in the weekends, I had a key of the studio. I was making a typeface, and I called it a Deunk Sans, mm-hmm. just because of this romantic idea that, oh, I'm working here right now, and this is the period, so I give it to him. And I showed it once to him, and he thought, oh, what an honor, what great. It wasn't really toward him, but it was just for me, the period. But so we had a really good connection, also besides that whole font making. But he saw me working on that in the weekends, when he came over to pick up a newspaper or something from the studio, then go back to his home. He saw me working all the time. He thought, hey, this kid is really into it. So and then it opened doors, and I went to Gerard Unger, his house in Bussen, or Naarden.
Bussen?
Yeah. And so we spoke and, about my work, and then we had once a month a meeting in Café Dancy on Waterloopplein, close to where Nijhoff & Lee, that bookstore used to be. So I we went to Nijhoff & Lee, and Geert said, oh, this is one of my students. So suddenly I was allowed to go to the attic and find all the good books for the, yeah, it opens doors and doors and doors. And that's what I think is so important.
And how does it, I'm curious about the projects that you work on, how does the relationship work, for example, with the architect? Are they very directive, or they just know for you, for your work?
Most of the time, they first want to meet you.
Yeah.
So I just get a phone call or email, I want to come over. And then, yeah, as you can see, I live in a small apartment, so for me it's always, oh, don't make it any bigger than this. No, I really want to come over. Also the architect, Thijs Verburg, of the new 14 bridges in the Houthaven, this new residential area in Amsterdam. So that, to me, is always a big deal. So I act cool, said, yeah, I got some room in my agenda, come over tomorrow. And then I close the phone and think, yes, very happy, of course. That's also this adrenaline, so crazy moments every once in a while. And then they come over. So first they want to meet me all the time. They want to see if you are really the person, how you come across, you know, online. That's really important to these people. And then, yeah, most of the time they really enjoy working with me, because I do a lot. I give them a lot. I made this whole segment of the bridge out of foam board. So I cut all these strokes of foam board and glued them together. So I made what now is in steel. I made it in foam board, and I painted it in the exact right raw color, etc., etc. So he came over, and then suddenly there was here a half segment of his bridge with the lettering on it. And he thought, huh? Is this real? No, it's foam board. Oh, nah. And people like that. But I also like it because I learned a lot from doing that, to look at the typo. Is it clear enough or not?
And it shows dedication.
Yes. Yeah. But all these clients, they get more than they ask from me.
And your ideal projects? I mean, your the one that you love the most, or from the last few years?
I just recently got the assignment to design new portal entrances for a building in Vlaardingen, that's close to Rotterdam, I should say. So for me, that was a big milestone. Also the Spanum and Buurt letters, because they were attached to this bridge a couple of days before I celebrated my 30th birthday. So that was actually quite young. For me, that was a big milestone also, because it gave me a lot the last 10 years. Everybody knows it, and a lot of work came out of that only. But just recently, this portal entrance. So I found that very strange. Somebody calls you and asks you, can you make this portal entrance that will be pre-casted in terrazzo. That's a sort of concrete with little stones in it, and you can give it a color. Yeah, of course I want to do that. There's no portals on my website. I'm not a constructor, or I'm not an architect. So somehow they had the idea that I was the right person for them. They also wanted lettering on this portal entrance. They wanted the street names and, of course, beautiful house numbers, and I need to make those ugly stickers from no advertising brochures, but then I'm going to make a nice little plates out of it, of course. And so, but in general, it's more an architectural kind of assignment. So for me, that was a project, or the project that's...
So typically, this is an architect would do this assignment. They wouldn't work with a specialist.
No, the assignment came from the people who live in that building.
Ah, okay.
There are five portals. The other buildings, they are six similar buildings. They will also get these portals with different street names and different house numbers. So I have some work also in that. Yeah, for me that was really strange. But it is in Vlaardingen. I made a World War II-III lettering. Just after the Second World War, there were a class of school children planted a seed there of a tree, and that grew and grew, of course. So the ring that was around it saying in honor of the Second World War, whatever, or our liberation, that was probably damaged by the tree, and then suddenly it was gone. So people knew there used to be a lettering around that tree. And so 2006 or something, they gave me the assignment to make a new lettering in honor of the original one. So that was in Vlaardingen. That's the only work I made in Vlaardingen. And one of the persons who live in this new building knew about that lettering and googled who made that lettering. That's how they came. these projects of mine, they do not come from families or friends. I give families and friends gifts and wedding gifts and sculptures and things like that, but they're all just real assignments from people who look at you and they...
But in the meantime, despite the fact you always look to get out of your comfort zone in a way, so like, this is like something I've never done, oh, this is interesting, this is something to study and research.
Yeah, but just saying yes to such an assignment.
But despite that, you are becoming or already are the go-to guy for typography outside, you know, public.
A few more people, but yeah.
Well, that specialization is contradictory to your way of looking for new things.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
So does that bother you?
Yeah, I don't think it's going into one little part, because this is, yeah, it's talk radio, so we don't have images. It's not a lecture. Then I could show you all these pictures. I think I do a lot of different things. Of course, I am a designer. I'm a band, and I make this album, and then I make a new album that is totally different from the previous one. I hope I do that. Yes, I'm a band, and yes, you hear my voice and the guitar play. You recognize things in it, but I think I do very different things. Mimicry cabinets, type made out of butterflies.
Are they real butterflies?
Yeah, they are real. This yeah, one was there. The first. It was a test, was an exhibition in The Hague called Don't Believe the Type. I think it was 10 years or so. And they asked some designers who were working with type to make something under that umbrella of Don't Believe the Type. And I already had that idea in the back of my head, because at that period, it was a little bit the hype to make type with things. You saw all these alphabets made with coffee spoons and shoelaces and bread crusts. And I started to think about that. How can I make something that had a bit more value, a bit more poetry in it? And that's how that idea came. And ever since I've been collecting butterflies, so there will be a series of them with poetry in it and maybe a publication or whatever.
Also, you mentioned the Spaarndammerbrug letter, which opened some doors for you. Later on, there was the tunnel under the railroad where you used the same typography, but that was not really an assignment. That was like a...
Yeah, it was a competition, call, yeah. But it was also the same lettering I also used at the backside of that railway overpass. It used to say, tot ziens, so for the people who...
Totally covered in graffiti, yeah, like all the right.
I don't mind, I was also a graffiti artist. Yeah, and then I used it a couple of more times. I used it in this competition, and there I decided to make one wall just Spaarndammerbrug, because it's a tunnel 45 meters long, and it's this beautiful word with two A's next to each other, and then two M's, and then two U's. And then at the other side of the wall, I made Westerpark, pointing towards the park. So that was already the first moment when where that type was not. It's not for the Spaarndammerbrug. Eh? Mm.
No, but it sort of became the identity font for the Spaarndammerbrug.
Yeah, they and the people who live there think so. And so I made Westerpark also, and there are a couple of more things done with that typeface. And then the architect of the Houthaven. So the Houthaven is next to the Spaarndammerbrug. It's the same sort of area, and they have this contemporary idea of Amsterdam School, and that's also in these letters. If you take mine alphabet next to an alphabet that was really 100 years old, for Museum Het Schip, these letters, then you will see that mine are way more contemporary. But that's all right. And they are also designed upon this bridge, and that has a fence behind the lettering where I needed to attach the lettering, and there are vertical bars in this fence, and I made my lettering, the openings in the letters, exactly between two vertical bars. So if you stand in front of it, the picture is as clear as possible. Yeah. That's also where this shape and this dimensions come from.
And looking back, for example, at a project from 10 years ago, is there things you would like to change?
Or
is
no. there,
you know, because it's almost it's permanent.
Yeah, yeah. No, but if I go there, my mother lives there, close to there, so I will see it a lot. It's strange, but it's not mine anymore. It's really part of that.
And can you look at it with other eyes and say, maybe I can change it. I would do it differently now?
I look at it with other eyes, but not, I would have changed that.
Because with more contemporary graphic design, like for instance a flyer or a poster, the event is gone.
Yeah.
It's in the past and the whole thing is gone. Yeah. And that's not with your...
No. But of course, that has its own quality in... You know, that you can play, that you can do a little experiment and maybe this was not that good, but who cares, because the next poster is already glued upon it. So these Houthaven bridges, they will be there within 100 years. If the Spaarndammerbrug will be there, I don't know, if it falls down or if something happens, probably it will be rebuilt because people in the neighborhood adopted it. So yeah, so I have to also think about that, that my work is always there for 10, 20, 30 years. Yeah.
Are there projects that are failures in your eyes that you're not happy with?
No, because I can easily work through the night to make sure that I am happy with it, or a weekend. You know, I'm a maker, I'm a designer, I work all the time. I don't have Netflix, I don't have a game console, I don't even have Spotify, I have my own little music collection. I'm just working and making things, and I'm always thinking about things. And for me, it's always this challenge to also have a good feeling about it in the end. To me, it doesn't matter if I have to work all weekend. If I have it done by Monday morning and I'm happy with it, that's when I'm really happy.
Yeah, but it's not about the working. I'm asking about if there's room for failure, or can you accept it, or everything.
Yeah, but it's failure.
Not failure, but in the sense that, okay, this is not the best result for a certain number of reasons.
Yeah, but I have to be aware that it is for such a long time. And therefore, I also make these sculptures and gifts for my relatives and family, and, you know, or a newborn child or whatever. I make these kind of things. To try out techniques and materials, and then something can be not really perfect anymore. If it's a wedding gift for a friend of you, it doesn't really matter if the stone carving is very professional or not. These were just a few of my first stones. So, but you know, you keep on going, and then suddenly a real assignment passes by, and then you, oh shit, now I need to be really good at my best. So it also gives you this adrenaline to take, to really get the best out of it.
Do you say no to projects?
I don't know. I never get any questions that are really stupid or something. All these assignments are really in my kind of area. I think if you go to my website, in a split second, you see who I am, I think. You see this, who I present myself, I don't make
it. But it's also the nature of your work. It is quite specific, and so that's why it's specific for you as well.
Yeah. So people will find you in the end. People will find you in the end. So for the last 13 years, I've been working on my own. So that's already a long period, and I'm 38 years old. And before that, I worked at the other studio, so I have this experience. So I can also execute these projects, even on my own. And then sometimes it's the city of Amsterdam or the city of Rotterdam, they are your client, but most of the time these are also architects. Of course, I like to work with them because they have their thoughts about our work. And so I work alone, and when I have a project with the architect, for me, it's suddenly I have a colleague, and we can look at the same
also, like,
work.
Listening to you speak, I have a feeling like time is very important for you.
No, not at all. Look at me. I don't have a watch. I don't have a smartphone. I don't really have an agenda.
It's not about the watch, but it's more that you're conscious of how you spend your time.
Yeah, that is. I want to make an oeuvre. Is oeuvre an English word?
Yeah.
I don't know. I want to make it. From a very early age, I had this. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Beatles, but also of Radiohead. But I just like them, you know. Yes, the Stones were cooler and tougher and more rock and roll. I understand it. But the Beatles, they just made these things at a very early age, 16 years old, and they just did it. And with each album, they tried something different. And I was always fascinated by that from a very early age on. That's something that's also inside of me. That's huge inspiration for me, if I can say so.
You were taught by Gerard Unger. You also worked with René Knip. Can you specify what you learned from René?
This guy has his atelier René Knip, but there are people working for him. So we made a type collection. So I worked at Studio Deuk, Tel Design, and worked with Gerard Unger. And at a certain point, I was back in Amsterdam, done with schools. Thought, okay, what's the next step? So I was looking around where to work at that moment, and I approached René, and he was thinking about making a type collection. So he said, why not do that together? So we did that. And you know, he's 20 years older than I am, and he paid for that publication, and he also paid me money to make that. But there is a lot of Janno in there. So after a few years, when that is finished and it's stamped with his name on it, for me it was totally fine. I always knew that at the same time I was building this, I knew that if I would accomplish that, there will be a new landscape for me to encounter. And then I also have this huge mountain of experience behind me. So I always saw it as a positive thing.
But to come back to my question, what did you learn from René?
Oh, No, it's just the experience that you go into a studio where there's a lot of work to be done and it need to be done, by Friday or whatever. So it's just work, making. And he moved to Friesland, and back then he didn't have a wife or a family. So I even moved with him. I worked there from Monday to Friday, and then I was back in Amsterdam to celebrate the weekend. So on these Mondays till Fridays, I was working, making things, and then, yeah, it's experience that you have. Yeah. But I just did this for a couple of years because I knew, yeah, I can be in Amsterdam and be at all these conventions and show my face and be very social on social media. But I knew what I was doing there was had much more value.
And the lessons from
there are no real lessons to.
No,
it's difficult
to answer.
It's more
than just different experiences.
He never sat next to me. He said, "You do it like this." He also took a lot of things that I put in letters, and I see that he still used them today, and the other way around. But you know, sometimes teacher becomes student, and student becomes teacher. That's very normal. He also had his mentor, Anton Baker, and Anton Baker had his mentor, Kaol, or whatever, of other people. So he passed them.
There's one thing about the stone carving. It's also in your alphabet, for the Dutch alphabet book, also where the carpet, the rug was.
Yeah, or the Escher alphabet.
Yeah. It seems like you are on the edge of 3D design and 2D design. Is that something that intrigues you, that sort of?
Yes.
Also because also Escher is also an inspiration for you?
Yes, I think for every Dutch designer, you can't deny Escher or Dick Bruna or Mondriaan Rietveld. You know, these are just in our genes. With this, for example, this is also why I dislike the computer as an end result. All these projects, even the mimicry cabinets, the butterflies, the computer is all involved in any kind of way. But I find the computer as an end result not so interesting because it's too much possible. It's like you step into a kitchen and all the ingredients of the world are there. And then you have the task to make a very simple, nice pasta where you only need 3 ingredients. So if you draw a facet typeface on a computer, you can do all these kinds of, it's very easy. You can make them very special, but then you need to execute it in real. And then there are some limits to it. And I like that, the fact that I need to make it. And so it has fewer things that I need to be aware of.
Yeah, the material itself gives you a limitation.
Yeah,
and helps
I
you.
Find a quality in that.
Last question.
Yeah.
How would you like to be remembered?
Oh, no, just as a good son for my parents and a good brother for my sisters and brother. And a good friend for some, that's it, I think. I don't have a family here, so maybe within a few years I will start a family and then it will be very different, of course. So that's why it's a very different question, especially for a person like me. I already think about the whole bigger picture. But for right now, just a good son, a good brother, a good friend, and that's it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Guten Abend. Jetzt gibt es Type Radio.